Hello, Nate Freeman. Welcome back,
Benjamin.
Nota Bene. What's up, my dude?
I am sitting outside of the Javits Center where the Armory Show has opened today. I'm outside because I'm not allowed to take off my mask inside, so I can't podcast with a mask on. So I'm outside in the rain with this enormous umbrella that Dominique Levy gave me.
No way. That's incredible. From the LBGQ, DMVL 5, 6, whatever the gallery name is.
I know.
That's so sweet of her.
I know. Very, very nice of her.
I really like that. That's a positive.
I know.
We just recorded an interview. You guys are going to hear it in a minute with tennis player and art collector Riley Opeka. I think I said his name right. I don't know, but
Riley is the man. Okay, stay tuned for that.
Yeah.
But first, let's recap what's going on. What is going on? We've already had a full week, and the fair just opened today.
It's all a blur, man. It started for me, came back midday on Sunday from Sag Harbor, back in the city. The whole family, car packed up. It was like a Griswold family trip.
Love it.
Good time. And the next day, right away, Tuesday, right at it, at the clearing opening for Cora Crit. Fantastic show.
Really stellar show. I mean, Crit has been making videos for his entire career. I really think this is the most stunning work he's possibly ever made. Run, do not walk to Bushwick.
The video is very, very strong. I really enjoyed it. And then a very hectic party
Honey's on the roof. I feel like
what is that place?
It's a meadery, Ben. They made
I didn't dig it. Didn't like it.
No, Honey's is cool. I don't like mead because I think it tastes like utter garbage. But like some people like it, I guess. But really, the vibe is cool. The owner.
There's just not enough bathrooms for me.
No, there aren't. That's true. There's the one tiny bathroom that you can see through to the other bathroom, which is like pretty intense.
I didn't even notice that.
Well, yeah. Anyway, so that was a night. That was just Tuesday. Yeah, I got back from the country on Tuesday, right into the thick of it.
Oh, man. Wow. You even cut it closer than I did.
I know, really close. And then, yesterday, already a ton of openings, a ton of stuff going on. I was running around. I chopped it up with a friend of the pod, Julian Schnabel. That was pretty sick.
That is very cool. I may or may not have seen a cool little private image sent to me of that meeting. So that was neat. There were a lot of openings. Did I see any? Not so much. But I did like the art market still in fuego. Like selling, like laying on my office couch here, texting and selling and buying, and a little bit overwhelming. Craziness.
Yeah, crazy amount of market activity.
I actually sold something during the car ride back from Honey's to my house.
Let's go.
If you can believe that.
I can't believe that you did anything on that car ride.
I'm pretty proud of myself, actually. Via text message, fish. Luckily, the driver let me play my music very loud and just got into it. Really significant. Not a huge sale, but I think it was a huge milestone for me personally.
That is just truly epic. That means you can truly sell art in any state of mind.
This is weird. You know, there's two big art fairs that have opened. So yesterday, Spring Break Art Fair opened. I didn't make it. I participated by watching people's stories. Didn't look like it was for me commercially, but good to see what the kids are up to.
People like that show. People like it.
And this morning was the first day of school, so I missed the opening of the Armory and of the Independent. I did swing by Park Avenue to see Con Trubkovich's show.
I did as well. It looks fabulous. My God. I could only stop by for a few minutes. I had to get the Armory, but I linked and built with friend of the pod, Adam Cohen, who helped put the show together. It looks fabulous. Congrats to Con and congrats to Adam. Really great show.
And then tonight, I mean, there's just a ton of openings. I'm going to try and go this afternoon. I don't think I can make it to the fairs because I need to go see Lisa Yuskovich's show, obviously. Mm-hmm. Then Hauser and Wirth has their first mega show with
mega Avery Singer Maddie.
Avery
show.
Singer show. I think that needs to be a good show for her. And it's interesting. Lisa has her show, and her husband Matavi Levinstein also has his opening. That's the same night at Kasman Gallery.
It's a family
which I think
affair.
Is kind of cool. It is a family affair. And you probably know Lisa's work. Might not know Matavi's, but I urge you to go check it out because he's mm-hmm. doing some cool new stuff.
Chelsea's going to be lit tonight. There's shows opening at the Gladstone Galleries. Two Richard Prince shows.
Super cool Richard Prince sculptures. These blasted out tires that are dope.
So dope. That's gonna be sick. The Listen Gallery has the John Comfort show and another show. Blanking on who else. Also, there's a bunch of Tribeca galleries opening tonight. It's just absolute madness in New York City.
Yeah, it really is. It really feels like it's back. I'm trying to be like a little bit keep it. Honestly, I want to keep it locked down because I don't want to catch a breakthrough case before I'm supposed to go to Europe. And because you get a test before you get on all these planes.
I know. But, you know, the chance of getting a breakthrough case, as the New York Times reported this week, is 1 in 10,000.
That's so true, but the tens of thousands of dollars I'll lose by not going to Basel and making some money may outweigh that risk. But you're right. You're right. No, I did like that. That Times article was great for lowering my personal anxiety, which is hard to do for someone as neurotic as me, but they put it into perspective how
unlikely it is. Oh, yeah. It made me feel fucking great. You know, just reading.
But if you're gonna catch it anywhere, it might have been at Honey's. I don't know.
That was outside, man.
No, and they did. You had to show a vaccination card record to get in, which I loved. I loved that they were doing that. That made me so happy.
It's really great that restaurants are just like really enforcing that hard. I mean, like I've been pushing this forever, and like you know, it's great. I love it. Even like me and friend of the pod, Alex Schulin, went to Paul's Casablanca the other day. You know, even there, they're being really, really tight. Cannot get in without a vax card and your ID.
And somewhat known for a loose environment there in general as it relates to, for instance, smoking inside, but the vax card, non-negotiable.
Yeah, non-negotiable. You can do whatever you want inside, but you need to be vaccinated.
Love it. Love to see it. I mean, there is some other big art world news. Probably the biggest popped off today is Sotheby's announced that they have, quote unquote, won the ability to sell the Macalo collection, Linda and Harry Macalow, who have had a very contentious divorce. And I think it's really sad. I mean, it's an amazing collection. From what I understand, it mostly was her that built it, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
He was doing the funding. So I think it's pretty sad that they couldn't come to a way to equitably distribute the assets without having to sell it all. They were just, they were unwilling to kind of like set things aside and figure it out.
That's divorce in New York City, baby. You know,
listen, it's one of the three D's that keep these auction houses going. Death, debt, and divorce. We haven't seen a big one like this in ages. And the market, it's been so hard to get prime material in the market right now because people basically, the money machine's going burr. And every rich person says, yeah, why would I want to sell this? What am I going to do with the capital? What am I going to do with the money? There's nowhere to put it. I have plenty of cash. So this is the kind of infusion of fresh, really top-notch, grade A material that a market needs both to keep it going, but also it'll be a good way to check in really where is the breadth and depth of bidding for these, you know, evening sale A1 lots.
Right. We haven't really seen a true test of that
since COVID.
Stratospheric. This is like, we haven't seen, you know, the real big lots anywhere in the last few years. So this will be a test of that. I was looking through it. These are A+ examples of each of these artists. And like, if you're a billionaire and you want a Rothko, this is your chance. Like, this is it.
No, these are all, there's very little filler. I mean, I'm sure there is some filler that they'll scatter in the day sales, but for the top stuff, this is some really good gear. Now I said kind of with an eye roll and an air quote around Sotheby's winning this, historically and traditionally the houses, mostly the two houses, but usually Phillips as well, so Christie and Sotheby's, can beat for these big consignments, but they oftentimes have to get so skinny on their margins that they end up losing money, even if the sale goes well, because they're giving in it. I'm not saying this in this case, but they're guaranteed. I'm not sure, but I presume it's guaranteed. They're also probably giving an enhanced hammer, which means they're giving back some of their vig on top of what the buyer sells. Some of the buyer premium is going to go into the seller's pocket, would be my guess. Again, I don't know the structure of the deal, but that's my sense. And so oftentimes it's real hard to make money with these things. What you're gaining is market share. But I wonder if Sotheby's owner, Patrick Ruggie, at the end of the day is going to look at the balance sheet and be like, oh, great, we got market share, but you just cost me, you know, $15 million plus.
Yeah. I mean, with the Taubman sale, this was years ago, Sotheby's lost money on that, even though they won the right to sell it. They lost money. It wasn't much. I think it was like 10 mil, but that sucks. Like, lose 10 mil in a deal.
I would also say there wasn't as good a stuff in that
right. No,
in that collection. And also Sotheby's couldn't lose that. Alfred Taubman had been the longtime chairman and owner of Sotheby's.
Exactly.
There was a feeling on the house's part, I think, that would be real egg on the face if Christie's were to walk away with that bit of business.
Totally. And like, you know, I know it's estimated in excess of 600. The court actually, they hired Michael Finley of Machiavella to provide like a objective sort of figure for how much this is worth. He put it in the mid 700 range, and possibly even higher. So this seems like kind of a conservative estimate for what actually will be made from these 65 works.
I'm excited to see it. You know, the great part about this is we'll get to go see these works in person in the auction previews.
Yeah, I know.
And before they go into, you know, into some specter-like
I almost went today. I was like tempted. I was out on the Upper East Side. I was like, I can just walk a few blocks, but it's just
too much. Are they up already? I didn't get that far. Yeah.
They're up.
Wow, what a great way to roll out that announcement, though, to make the announcement and have them available for viewing same day. I mean, that's pretty special.
I know. And just like, what a way to like just sort of suck some air, you know, some oxygen out of the room. Like the day that the two fairs are opening, be like, oh, guess what? We got 600 mil of art on our walls. Like,
you know, and Noah Horowitz.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you're going to see that junk at the Javits Center. Like, come see some real fucking
Let's go. I love it. And there's other quick hit real quickly. I thought it was interesting. Your former reported on extensively by your former colleagues at ArtNet is this little slush fund that Art Basel has put together to kind of act as a sort of insurance policy for dealers that don't perform that well or have some issues because of COVID related things at the upcoming Basel Art Fair.
I know.
I don't have much to add to that. I mean, I think it's more PR than practicality, but you know, I like that they're trying to find a way to give people comfort, especially for the middle market and smaller dealers that, you know, they have to.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, it was big of Mark to acknowledge in his letter to the exhibitors that like some of you might lose money doing my fair. Like that was, I've never seen that kind of talk from a fair director before. That being said, I think that, you know, I think that Basel will be a success just judging by the way that like, you know, the Armory Show, which is not as prestigious or, you know, important of a fair as Art Basel. People are here, people are going, you know, and I think that the way that people from around the country who can get to New York pretty easily, I think people from around Europe who can get to Basel easily are going to be there. So.
Great. And I have to say, I actually thought, a lot of the material from the previews I saw at the Armory and Independent was fairly top notch, more top notch than I'm used to seeing at the Armory specifically in the past. You know, there's some great stuff, especially by some of the bigger dealers. All right, I don't want to take up too much time. We both have a lot to do. People out there have a lot to do. We have an amazing Riley's interview coming up with Riley. So all you out there, stay safe, stay hydrated, wear comfortable walking shoes. See if Dominique Levy will lend you an umbrella as well, because it is raining right now here in New York. And with that, stay tuned for Riley. And we're out for now. Talk to you in a bit, Nate. I'll see you in a bit.
Yep, bye.
All right, buddy. Cheers. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Nota Bene.
Welcome to Nota Bene.
Nate Freeman and myself, Benjamin Godsell here, and we are so happy to be joined by probably the only professional athlete I know of that's sponsored by a contemporary art gallery or any art gallery for that matter, Riley Opeka. How are you, sir? What's going on, brother?
Riley, welcome to Notice. How's it going? Oh, it's going so good.
It's a busy day here in New York. Obviously, you just had a real busy time here in New York, but the art season and fashion week are in full effect, so we're trying to keep it down. We wanted to get you on here because we just found out that there's someone that hits two interests of ours, obviously art, which is our focus, but also big also fans tennis. Of the tennis. So
big fans of you. Right?
We wanted to meet you this way and say, what's up? How you doing? How's it going?
I'm doing well. Yeah. I just got wrapped up at the US Open. I had a pretty hectic summer. I was on the road a lot and I was playing back-to-back weeks. I started in Atlanta, then went to DC, Toronto, Cincinnati, and then wrapped it all up in New York. So I'm stoked. I got some downtime now, and I'm just kind of hitting the reset button and trying to be fresh for the rest of the season coming up.
And the season continues on. I'm such a noob when it comes to professional tennis schedules. Like when do you guys start back up again?
Yeah, so I'm playing Laver Cup. And I believe I leave in about 10 days to Boston. And then I go right from Boston to the West Coast. I'm playing a tournament in San Diego, and then I'm playing Indian Wells shortly after that. And then and I go like right from Indian Wells over to Europe. And then we have our last little swing of the year in Europe. I'm playing a tournament in Antwerp, Vienna, and Paris. And then that's it for me for the year.
I mean, pretty cool cities. Do you get to see any of these cities when you're touring?
Did you get to hang in New York?
Normally, yeah, I did actually. I got to hang in New York. I'm actually flying back up to New York Saturday morning. I'm going for Fashion Week. I'm going to go to a couple shows, including the Tom Brown show Saturday night, which I'm stoked about.
Hey, Riley, guess what? I'm going to be there too.
Oh, no way.
At the Tom Brown show. Yeah, I'll see you there.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah. Nate was just married a couple weeks ago, and Tom Brown was nice enough to dress him in a beautiful white suit for the occasion.
Oh, no way. That's incredible.
It was really rad, dude. It was great.
Yeah. I'm sure. That's incredible. Yeah, I'm stoked for the show. We'll have to catch up once we're there. But
we'll link and build, dude.
Yeah, I got some good downtime in. I did a good job of also exploring just having some time away from tennis as well. Like on my off days, I got to venture around. I stayed in Soho. I ate real good. Went to Sedell's a bunch.
Nice.
That's always a good time. I went to, you name it. I had like a little food tour going for a couple weeks, for the 2 weeks I was there. But yeah, normally I do get to explore and venture around in the cities. However, with COVID, they have us pretty much locked in our hotel rooms outside of the United States. So whenever we play in Europe, we're literally not allowed to leave our hotel rooms unless we're going to the ports. Yeah. So it's not the most fun. But yeah, hopefully that'll change eventually.
That must be tough on the mental health tip. I would go nuts stuck in a
hotel. Yeah, it's miserable, and it's totally for optics, which is like what really irritates me. Like there's other guests staying in the hotel, outside guests, there's people in the tournament that are working the tournament that aren't even staying in the bubble, let's say. So it's all for optics. It's not even like these people are still, players are still getting COVID. It's just like there's no positive to it other than optics. It just, like you said, like completely jeopardizes our mental health.
Totally. We'll circle back to that, but I wanted to, the reason I was asking, because I mean, I would think that like being able to pop out and like see some galleries, like stuff like that would be like a good mental health break, and just kind of, you know, you can zone out on something that isn't you and the ball and the court, right?
Yeah, that's what I used to do, actually. I mean, that's pre-COVID. That's how I got into art, was from traveling and being in all these great cities in Europe where you have access to museums, where you can really see the masters. You know, you can see all the old masters' works, and you can really learn. I mean, it just helps identify, like, it helps identify a lot of like the frauds, let's say, in today's art world. You know, mm-hmm. I guess you can call it.
You go to the Prado or the Louvre or like, you know, any of those old school great classic European museums, and it really puts into context the kind of painting you're seeing today. For what I do anyway.
Yeah, totally. I mean,
and then something like, you know, that's my favorite way to work with, when I work with collectors, is like, no, let's not go to an art fair, go to galleries first. Like, let's go see what made it to museums, and then we can kind of contextualize, well, what are we looking at today that in 200 years could have the same relevance and the same vibe.
Totally. Yeah. Totally.
So doing my little bit of, you know, we're not real research based here, but the little research I did, I realized that we have a mutual friend in common, one of my favorite contemporary painters, Freddy Kunath. Is that someone you met after you got into painting or into art and vibing on art, or is that someone you met through other means?
Yeah, I mean, Freddy is one I just kind of discovered as I was really getting into art, and then he had this, you know, love for tennis. We got connected. And he's one of my best friends. He came with me to the U.S. Open. He was there the whole time. I gave him he had a credential, which,
that's so cool.
So I put him down as my trainer, which is hilarious. And then we were hanging out, the whole time, just talking about tennis and art. So I got my fix of art in just by talking with him and bothering him. And he got his fix of tennis in by coming around the U.S. Open.
Oh man, that's friendship. I love that. I love it. Cause I hear, I mean, yeah, he's really beautiful. Into tennis. I hear like, as far as club amateurs go, he's pretty solid.
Yeah, how's he doing?
That's the rumor.
He's very good. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for like a club amateur player, he's legit.
I love to hear. And he's a great painter. You collect his work, right? You have a piece by Freddie as well.
I do. So cool. Yeah.
He's a very, very cool painter. And is that how you got introduced to his gallery in Antwerp, and how that kind of sponsorship, kind of friendship, or as you've termed it, collaboration came about?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It just happened through Freddie. I was asking Freddie, oh, where are you showing next? Oh, I'm getting ready for the show in Antwerp. This is a while ago, because he was painting. I was where are all these works going? He's like, well, it's going with Tim Van Laar at Antwerp. And then, oh, really cool. And then you know, it came full circle. All those works, when I visited his studio, like some of the ones that he was working on by that time, and, you know, ended up in Tim Van Lark's show. And after Tim and I had our partnership, after the French Open, the first time I actually ever met Tim in person was like the last day of Freddie's show at his gallery. So the first show I got to see at Tim's gallery was Freddie.
So cool. And then you guys got to rapping, I guess. And he offered some sort of sponsorship deal, which I think is so dope. So you carry like a bag with the gallery logo. And I think it's on the side of your arm on some of your playing days. Is that right?
Yeah, his logo is on my sleeve. And the bag's not part of the deal. It's just, I like it. You know, it's not the bag by any, it's not in, there's no, it was organic. There wasn't much negotiating. There was no,
right.
No legal involved on anyone's side. It was as organic of a deal as there could be. And it was perfect. Yeah. It worked out great, and he never asked me to carry a bag on court. So I always like that. I love that color. I love that bag, and it's different.
It slaps for sure.
Tim gave me one of those bags at the Dallas Art Fair a few years ago, and it was my go-to tote bag for a long time. I still have it, of course. It's just a great tote. So yeah, before the whole fracas went down, we'll get into that. But I noticed you carrying around the bag, and I was like, oh yeah, Tim has the best bag in the whole business.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Yeah, I clocked that for the first time during the Open as well. And I was like, oh wait, is this guy into art? Like, how did he get that bag? And then I started Googling, and then the fracas, as Nate put it, came up. And that's how I kind of got into like a little deep dive. And he's like, oh, this guy's cool, man. Like I knew he was big and like he serves like a motherfucker, but I didn't know he was down too. And then I saw that. I think it's a great picture just visually of you. You're like somehow holding like seven rackets with one finger, which is also just kind of like OG and dope. And this popping pink bag in the middle. And then I was like, oh, that's a great image. And then I saw, oh, he got like, you know, that cost as much as a Birkin for rocking that bag.
Yeah.
So wait, walk us through what happened. When the fine happened, like what was the first, what happened?
So, basically, it's super complicated. Like the ATP and the ITF are two separate governing bodies. The ATP is like Association of Tennis Professionals. The ITF, they kind of oversee all the Grand Slams, which are, you know, the four tournaments per year, the four big ones. And so there are different rules in each tournament. So I'm allowed like 4 square inches, I guess, of that TVLG bag, like it's fine. It just has to be 4 square inches on the logo, but it's someone's name, which, you know, whatever. It's like, there was a lot of gray area. So when I carried it on the court, the first match, I thought it was about 4 to 5 square inches, but it wasn't. And they're like, well, you need to get it measured. And I'm like, guys, I'm trying to win a tennis match. Like the last thing that I'm worried about here is measuring the logo. Like, you know? And so then, they didn't say after my first round, no big deal, whatever. I walk out onto the court of my second round, and then like they find out from like one of the tennis journalists who like tweeted it. They didn't even tell me. Like I found out to him that I got fined $10,000, and I went into the referee's office. I was like, guys, like you realize there's players that break rackets over their legs that, you know, are cursing out their box for 10 minutes straight, yelling at their coach, smashing rackets, and they're not getting fined. And if they are, it's $1,500. Like, why $10,000 for this bag, you know? And like, well, you should have came in and got it measured, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, man, like, that's your job to measure. My job is to beat the best players. That's not part of the program for me.
I think it's just, you know, in terms of players trying to assert their rights over their own personhood, like within the kind of very corporatized world that sports have become, have been less. And I think that's in a bunch of stuff, especially individual sports like tennis. So I think it kind of stood out just culturally for that moment with you guys trying to take a little bit more control over your personhood and kind of how you're able to. And I think it ultimately would be good for sports if it weren't a bunch of boomers maybe running them, because I think people are attracted to personalities and people that are assertive and kind of do their own thing.
Totally.
Have you ever rapped with, you know, the other great tennis player who's also a great art collector is called John McEnroe, who has a pretty killer collection. Is pretty good at buying and selling art as well, I have to say.
Yeah,
he's done pretty well financially.
He had a gallery in Soho. That was his job after he retired. He was like, he had his name on the door and everything.
Have you guys ever rapped about art together?
Yeah, we have. We have. We played tennis about last summer, I think around July, up in Malibu. We practiced one day at the Malibu Racquet Club and grabbed lunch after. We were talking a lot about it. And obviously the tournament my next tournament, the Laver Cup in Boston, he's the captain of my team. There's me and six other guys, Team World versus Team Europe. And he's the captain of Team World. Borg's the captain of Team Europe. So it's a cool event. But I'm sure we're going to have some more time to discuss art. But yeah, he's a fan of Kunoth as well. He collects some of Freddie's works. His art collection's insane.
I love the overlap of two worlds. I think there's something, and I might be over reading into it, but there's something about a sport, especially singles tennis, which is so about you. No matter how big a team you have, like, you know, behind the scenes and training and stuff, when you're on the court, it's just you. And I think you could build similarities with an artist in the studio, even if they have like a big dealer and like studio assistants. When it comes down to it, it's them and the canvas or the sculpture or whatever. And I think there's something about that mindset that maybe there's some commonality there.
Yeah, totally.
And before I wrap things up on the fashion tip real quick, I understand you're as Nate and I are as well, a big fan of Emily Bodie's work.
Yeah. I got some shirts coming now. I actually did during the Open one day. So I got some stuff I'm waiting on patiently. Well, not so patiently, but.
I feel you. Emily's a good friend of mine. And every time I go into her store, it's like, I start salivating. I want everything. It's so good.
Yeah, it is. It's really well done. I'm a big fan of hers. I got to meet her a few times. We did a fitting back in the day before she actually opened that store. And she made this really cool, like, corduroy jacket. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, completely, like, she's a beautiful, beautiful piece. It's one of my favorites. I'm a huge, huge fan of Emily's.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So when you come out this weekend, are you going to be able to see any shows, any gallery shows, go to the Armory or Independent? Have you started looking at maybe?
Yeah, I'm going to try to, Tim has a good mutual friend named Christoph Vandewey. I'm going to reach out to him.
Great.
And I want to try to check out his collection. I know he's got some beautiful art. I know he's got a really great collection. So.
Chris has an amazing collection.
He's a baller. Yeah. Absolute baller.
Yeah.
You're going to be blown away.
Yeah, no, he's a super, super nice guy. So I think that's kind of my only plan for the weekend is Tom Brown. And I'm going to see if Christoph is around. We were going to try to link up during the Open. It just never worked out. I was super busy. But I'm going to try to make my way over to his this weekend so I can check out some
listen Tom Brown and Christoph Vandewey. That's like the perfect coupling. That's all you need right there.
That's really perfect.
New York City. So
I also wanted to ask, what was, you know, because like after the bag became infamous, you had Freddie write unapproved on it, and it's kind of like a Kunoth now, you know.
Yeah,
like what's going to become of that bag?
Yeah,
that work of art, really.
Yeah, you know, I think it's cool. I think it's like, it's cool because one, it's super punk, you know, like especially with the pink, and it was just super organic, like it didn't like that. So that's what they called it on the fine. It was like unapproved bag. So I'm like, oh, this is great, like perfect. And Freddie's handwriting is just so iconic, and then he draws those little birds even like. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, I wanna. Hopefully get a bunch of them so I can start passing them out to some friends and some people. Hopefully maybe even at Indian Wells, I think would be a cool place where hopefully Tim can just ship over a bunch to my hotel and I can just throw them out to everyone I see. I think that'd be fun.
That'd be amazing. Yeah.
I'd rather that than the signed tennis ball personally. That's pretty dope.
Yeah, exactly.
I think those are cool. You know, I don't think Freddie's gonna have time to hand draw on all of them, but you know, if we can get some printed on there, I think it'd be really cool. And I think the pink is just like obviously it's iconic in the art space. I mean, Franz West is a huge icon, and that's where that tone of pink, you know, is inspired is from Franz West. It's Tim Van Laar bag. But yeah, I think that pink is classy in the art space. But I think now in the tennis world, it's becoming more of a punk look, which is like totally real cool to me. So I want to see pink bags around the tennis courts. I want to see a lot of that pink brown. I think it's a great color. I think it.
Let's go.
Like you said, it crosses paths, the two, art and tennis. So
For sure. Let's fucking go. I love it, man. All right, my dude. Thank you for making the time. I know you're busy. Enjoy your downtime before you get back onto the circuit. Nate and I are getting back onto the art circuit. We got some flights coming up to Europe and the fairs. It seems like the world is coming back together, hopefully. And we look forward to
it's coming back.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. We look forward to watching you along the way and have someone to root for that we know is got a nice strong art connection. Hopefully we can bump into each other, link and build going forward somewhere out in the world.
Totally, sounds dude. Great. Okay. I'll see you Saturday.
Yeah, I'll see you, Tom Brown.
Yeah. All right, dude. All right. Thanks, Riley.
All right, guys. Thanks so much, man. Appreciate it.
Nota Bene out.
Nota Bene out. Later.